A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's pointing out that countless developers use Cloudflare every day, but almost nobody knows the company's actual story. He wants us to walk through the history, then dig into their recent moves, the AI product line, the deployment platform, the way they've pushed way past DNS and security into things like R2 object storage, and the big question underneath all of it: what's their end game? Are they actually becoming a credible alternative to the traditional cloud providers?
Oh, this is a good one. Cloudflare is one of those companies where the surface-level story everyone knows. They do see DON and DDoS protection. It's about 20% of what's actually interesting. And the other 80% has been unfolding in plain sight for a decade.
The CDN that ate the internet.
The CDN that looked at the internet and said, "What if we just ran all of it?"
Where does this story actually start? Because I think most people's mental model is, Cloudflare appeared around 2010-11 and saved a bunch of sites from getting knocked offline. Which is true, but there's a weirder origin story underneath that.
There absolutely is. So the company was founded in 2009 by Matthew Prince, Lee Holloway, and Michelle Zatlin. Prince had gone to Harvard Business School, and the actual seed of Cloudflare came out of a class project there. He'd previously started a company called Unspam Technologies, which was focused on tracking email spammers. But the real origin moment, and this is where the DNA of the company becomes visible, is Project Honeypot.
Which is not a Winnie the Pooh reference, I'm assuming?
Not even slightly. Project Honeypot was a distributed network of website operators who embedded special tracking code on their sites to identify and track email harvesters and spammers. Prince and Holloway built it starting around 2004. The key insight was that they had this massive distributed sensor network across the internet, thousands of websites feeding them data about malicious traffic patterns. And they realized the same infrastructure that detected bad traffic could also stop it.
The security company was born out of a spam tracking side project.
It gets better. Holloway was the technical genius. He basically wrote the entire initial code base himself. And I mean the entire thing. The story goes that he'd show up to meetings, someone would describe a problem, and he'd just, in real time, during the meeting.
The terrifying kind of engineer.
The kind where you're almost relieved when they're not in the room, because it's exhausting just watching them work. But here's what's relevant to the endgame question Daniel's asking. Cloudflare launched at TechCrunch Disrupt in 2010, won the competition, and their pitch from day one was not, "We're a security company." It was, "We're going to build a better internet."
Which at the time probably sounded like standard startup grandiosity. "We're a CDN with a firewall, but we're calling it something bigger."
Right, and for the first few years, that's mostly what they were. They built out a global network, and this is the part that becomes structurally important later. They didn't rent data center space from existing providers. They went to internet exchanges directly, places where networks peer with each other. By 2014, they were in something like 30 data centers worldwide. Today, they're in over 300 cities across more than 100 countries. That physical footprint is the moat.
While everyone was racing to build bigger centralized cloud regions, here's our US. East 1, here's our Europe. West 2. Cloudflare was doing the opposite, spreading out to every edge they could reach.
And this is the architectural bet that everything else flows from. The traditional cloud model is, you pick a region, you deploy there, your stuff runs in that data center. Cloudflare's model from the beginning was, your stuff runs everywhere, as close to the user as possible. They called it the edge, before edge computing was a buzzword. And in 2017, they launched Workers, which was the moment the platform play became visible.
Workers is the thing that lets you run code on their network, right? Not just cache static assets, but actually execute logic.
Yes, and the significance here is hard to overstate. Before Workers, Cloudflare was a network you passed through. With Workers, it became a platform you built on. They took the V8 JavaScript engine, the one from Chrome, and put it into their edge locations. You write a function, deploy it, and it runs in every Cloudflare data center simultaneously. No region selection, no scaling configuration, no provisioning.
The serverless pitch before serverless became a checkbox feature.
Critically, they didn't charge by server uptime or instance hours. They charged by request, a fraction of a cent per invocation. So the economic model matched the architectural model. Pay for what you use, not for what you reserve.
Which is appealing until you realize you've just tied your application logic to a proprietary runtime. The lock-in question.
It's the obvious objection, and it's one they've been working to address. They open-sourced the Workers runtime, they built compatibility layers, and more recently they've leaned hard into standard APIs. But you're right, the lock-in risk is real, and it's the main counterpoint to the Cloudflare as cloud alternative thesis. We should come back to that.
Before we get to the recent stuff, there's a chapter in the middle of this story that I think explains a lot about how the company thinks, the 8.8.8.8 situation.
Oh, this is such a revealing episode. So, in 2018, Cloudflare launched a DNS resolver, 1.1.1.1, pitched as the fastest, most privacy-respecting DNS service. It was a direct shot at Google's 8.8.8.8, and they marketed it aggressively, but almost immediately, there was a problem.
The routing leak?
Not just any routing leak. Within weeks of launch, a major ISP in, I want to say it was somewhere in Southeast Asia, accidentally announced routes that caused a huge volume of traffic destined for 1.1.1.1 to be misdirected. And because 1.1.1.1 is such a clean IP address, it turned out that a shocking number of networks had been using it internally for testing, for private addressing, for all sorts of things you should never do with a public IP.
The internet's dirty secret. Half the networks out there are held together with assumptions that were never supposed to leave the lab.
Cloudflare had to eat this. They got flooded with traffic that wasn't even malicious. It was just misconfiguration on a global scale, but the way they handled it was instructive. They didn't back down from the 1.1.1.1 marketing push. They wrote incredibly detailed technical postmortems. They worked with network operators worldwide to clean up the bad configurations. And they turned what could have been a humiliation into a demonstration of technical competence.
The blog post as strategic weapon. Cloudflare's real product might be their content marketing.
I would actually argue it's one of their core advantages. Their technical blog posts, and there are thousands of them, serve as a kind of distributed engineering recruiting funnel. The kind of engineer who gets excited about debugging a BGP routing leak at global scale is exactly the kind of engineer Cloudflare wants to hire.
That brings us to roughly the present. And this is where Daniel's prompt gets really interesting. They've launched R2 object storage. They've acquired an AI company. They've got a deployment platform. They're clearly not content to be the security and CDN layer anymore. What's the shape of what they're building?
Let me start with R2 because it's the most direct challenge to the existing cloud order. R2 is object storage. Think Amazon S3. Think Google Cloud Storage. With one headline feature, zero egress fees.
Which is the thing everyone hates about S3.
It's the thing that makes companies afraid to leave IWS. The egress fees, the cost of moving your data out of their cloud, can be staggering. It's essentially a tax on portability. Cloudflare launched R2 in 2022 and said, "We will store your objects, we will charge you for storage and for operations, but we will charge you $0 to get your data back out."
The, "we're not going to hold your data hostage" pitch?
It's not just a pricing gimmick. It's structurally consistent with their architecture. Cloudflare peers directly with thousands of networks. Their bandwidth costs are fundamentally lower than a traditional cloud provider's because they're not paying transit fees in the same way. So they can afford to zero out egress in a way that AWS structurally cannot, or will not, match.
Has AWS responded?
They've made some moves around free tier egress, and they've pointed to their own CD on integration, but they haven't zeroed out egress pricing, and I don't think they will. The egress revenue is too significant. What Cloudflare is doing is essentially unbundling the cloud provider's profit center.
RT is the storage piece. What about compute? Workers was the first step. Where are they now?
Workers has evolved significantly. They've added durable objects, which give you stateful, coordinated storage at the edge. They've added queues, key value stores, ASQL database called D1. They've built an entire platform of primitives that look increasingly like the building blocks you'd use to assemble a full application. And in 2024, they launched Workers AI.
Which is the inference at the edge play.
The idea is you deploy AI models, open source models, fine-tuned models, onto Cloudflare's network, and they run on GPUs distributed across their edge locations. The pitch is ultra-low latency inference because the model is physically close to the user.
Then this year, they acquired Replicate.
That happened just, let me check my notes, earlier this year, 2026. Cloudflare acquired Replicate, which was one of the leading platforms for running and sharing open-source machine learning models. Replicate had built a really elegant developer experience around model deployment. You could spin up a model with a few lines of code, and they handled all the infrastructure. The acquisition brings that expertise in-house and gives Cloudflare a much stronger story around the full AI workflow, not just inference, but fine-tuning, model management, the whole pipeline.
The pieces start to look like you've got storage with R2, compute with workers, databases with D1 and durable objects, AI inference with workers, AI, and now model deployment and management from Replicate. A cloud platform.
It's a cloud platform built on a fundamentally different architecture, and I think this is the key to understanding their endgame. The traditional cloud providers, AWS, Azure, Google Cloud, are built on a model of centralized regions. You pick where your stuff runs. Cloudflare's bet is that for a huge class of applications, you shouldn't have to pick. Your code, your data, your models should just be everywhere.
Not everything can run at the edge. You're not putting a massive training cluster in 300 points of presence.
And they're not claiming to replace everything. They're not going after the GPU clusters that train foundation models. They're going after the inference layer, the application serving layer, the data storage layer, the stuff that touches end users. And the Replicate acquisition suggests they might also be thinking about the developer workflow layer that sits between training and production deployment.
It's less we're replacing AWS, and more, we're replacing the part of AWS that actually faces your users.
Which, for a lot of applications, is most of what matters. Think about a typical SaaS product. You've got user-facing APIs, you've got static assets, you've got a database, you've got file storage, maybe you've got some AI features. All of that can run on Cloudflare's platform today. The only thing that still needs a traditional cloud provider is the heavy back-end processing, and even some of that is moving to the edge.
What's the developer experience actually like? Because one of AWS's superpowers, despite the complexity, is that you can do anything. There's a service for every conceivable need. Cloudflare's platform is younger and narrower.
It's younger and narrower, but it's also, and I think this is intentional, simpler. The API surface is smaller. The configuration model is more opinionated. You don't have to think about VPCs and subnet configurations and IAM policy minutiae. For developers who find AWS overwhelming, Cloudflare is genuinely appealing. For developers who need the full AWS feature set, it's not a replacement yet.
The target customer is the startup that wants to move fast and doesn't want to hire a DevOps team.
Or the team inside a larger company that's building a new product and doesn't want to inherit the organizational complexity of their existing cloud infrastructure. I've talked to engineering leads who say, we could build this on AWS, but we'd spend 40% of our time on infrastructure configuration. On Cloudflare, that number drops significantly.
The build me a chair nobody notices they're sitting in. Approach to platform design.
And the AI angle makes this even more interesting. If you're a developer who wants to add AI features to your app, summarization, image generation, embeddings, whatever, Cloudflare's pitch is, write a few lines of JavaScript, deploy it, and it runs on GPUs at the edge with no infrastructure management. That's a compelling value proposition compared to provisioning GPU instances on AWS or navigating the maze of AI services on Google Cloud.
There's another piece of this that Daniel mentioned, the deployment platform. What's that about?
Cloudflare has been building out what they call their full-stack platform. They acquired a company called PartyKit, which was focused on real-time collaborative applications. Think multiplayer editing, live dashboards, that kind of thing. They built Pages, which is a Jamstack deployment platform that competes with Vercel and Netlify. They've got their own CI/CD pipeline integration. The vision is that you go from Git push to deploy globally in one step.
They're also competing with Vercel. The competitive surface area keeps expanding.
This is the thing that makes the in-game question so interesting. Cloudflare is simultaneously competing with AWS, with Vercel, with Fastly, with Akamai, with parts of the AI platform ecosystem.
The sloth approach to business strategy. Move slowly into every market at once.
They're not moving slowly. That's the thing. They've been remarkably fast. The R2 launch, the AI inference launch, the replicate acquisition, the D1 database, the durable objects. This has all happened in roughly 3 to 4 years. For a company that was essentially a CDN with a firewall a decade ago, the pace of platform expansion is striking.
If you're building on Cloudflare as your primary platform, what are the failure modes?
First, the runtime limitation. Workers run on V8 isolates. They're not full virtual machines. They're not containers in the traditional sense. There are CPU time limits, memory limits, and not every Node.js package works. The compatibility story has improved dramatically, but it's not seamless.
You might discover 6 months in that. A critical library doesn't work, and you've built yourself into a corner.
That's risk number one. Risk number two is the lock-in we mentioned. Workers, D1, R2, durable objects. These are all Cloudflare-specific APIs. You can architect around this to some degree by keeping your business logic portable and using Cloudflare as an execution layer, but in practice, the deeper you integrate, the harder it is to leave.
Risk number three.
The single point of failure problem. If Cloudflare has an outage, and they've had a few significant ones, everything you've built on their platform goes down simultaneously. In 2024, there was an incident where a configuration change cascaded across their network and took down a significant portion of their services for hours. If you're diversified across multiple cloud providers, an AWS outage might take down part of your stack. If you're all in on Cloudflare, a Cloudflare outage takes down everything.
The flip side of simplicity is concentration risk.
They know this. To their credit, they're transparent about incidents. Their postmortems are detailed and publicly available. But the architectural reality is that a unified global platform means a unified global failure domain.
There's an interesting question here about who actually wants this. The deploy everywhere automatically. Pitch is great for read-heavy applications, content sites, APIs that are mostly serving data. But if you've got write-heavy workloads, or strong consistency requirements, or complex transaction logic, doesn't the edge model start to creak?
This is where durable objects are supposed to help. They provide strong consistency by routing all requests for a given object to a single location, so you get coordination without a centralized database. But you're right that the programming model is different. You have to think in terms of distributed state, not a monolithic database. It's a more constrained model, and not every application fits neatly into it.
The end game. And I realize we're asking a question that probably doesn't have a single answer. But if you had to characterize what Cloudflare is trying to become, what's the shape of it?
I think they're trying to become the default platform for the programmable internet. Not the cloud, the internet. The distinction matters. The traditional cloud providers treat the internet as something that exists outside their data centers, something you connect to. Cloudflare treats the internet as the platform itself. Every point of presence is a compute node. Every peering connection is part of the network fabric. The platform isn't a region you deploy to, it's the global network you deploy onto.
They're not building a better cloud. They're building something that makes the cloud, as a concept, irrelevant for a certain class of applications.
That's the bet. And it's not a crazy bet. If you look at where application architecture has been heading, serverless, edge-rendered, globally distributed, AI-augmented, Cloudflare's model maps more naturally to that future than the region-based model does. The question is whether they can expand the set of applications that fit their model faster than the traditional cloud providers can adapt their models to be more edge-native.
AWS has Lambda at Edge, CloudFront Functions, their own edge compute story. They're not standing still.
They're not, but they're also not structurally incentivized to cannibalize their own regional compute revenue. Every workload that moves to the edge on AWS is a workload that's not running on EC2 instances in a region. Cloudflare doesn't have that conflict. Their entire business is edge native. They don't have a legacy regional hosting business to protect.
The innovator's dilemma, but Cloudflare is the innovator and AWS is the incumbent trying to protect the cash cow.
At some point, the things they're disrupting become their own revenue base, and they'll have to decide whether to disrupt themselves or defend what they've built.
The circle of tech life.
Elton John is somewhere taking notes.
One thing I want to come back to, the AI piece. The Replicant acquisition is interesting, but there's another AI move they made that I think is more revealing about how they think. The AI Labyrinth thing.
This was, I think it was, early 2025. Cloudflare announced something called AI Labyrinth, which is a tool designed to fight back against AI bots that scrape websites. The idea is, when Cloudflare detects an unauthorized AI crawler scraping a site, instead of just blocking it, it serves the bot a maze of AI-generated decoy content.
The honeypot, but with generative AI filling it with plausible-looking nonsense.
It generates realistic but fake pages that lead to more fake pages, and the scraper wastes compute cycles and storage on garbage. It's Project Honeypot updated for the AI era. And what I love about this is that it's deeply on-brand for Cloudflare. They're using their network position to fight what they see as bad actors, and they're doing it with a clever technical approach that also serves as marketing.
Also, it's just satisfying. The idea of some massive scraping operation quietly filling its training data with AI-generated word salad about imaginary products and fake blog posts.
It's the technical equivalent of putting a whoopee cushion on the chair before the meeting starts.
It also signals something about their stance in the AI ecosystem. They're not just building AI infrastructure, they're taking sides in the data scraping debate. They're positioning themselves as the platform that protects content creators from unauthorized AI training.
Which is smart positioning because it differentiates them from the cloud providers who are mostly trying to sell AI services to everyone and don't want to alienate either side. Cloudflare can afford to be more opinionated because their core business is protecting websites. It's consistent with their brand.
If we're trying to answer Daniel's endgame question, do we think Cloudflare becomes a credible alternative to AWS, Azure, and Google Cloud for a meaningful slice of the market?
I think they already are for a specific developer persona. If you're building a modern web application, you're comfortable with JavaScript or TypeScript, you want global distribution without thinking about it, and you're willing to accept some platform constraints in exchange for operational simplicity. Cloudflare is not just credible, it's arguably better than the alternatives.
If you're running a Fortune 500 company with decades of legacy infrastructure, hybrid cloud requirements, and compliance constraints across 17 jurisdictions,
then Cloudflare is a piece of your stack, not your platform. You might use them for DNS, for DDoS protection, for CDN, maybe for some edge compute, but you're not migrating your SAP workloads to Workers.
The endgame isn't Cloudflare replaces AWS. It's Cloudflare becomes the default platform for new internet, native applications, while the traditional cloud providers handle everything else.
Over time, as more of the economy becomes internet native, Cloudflare's addressable market expands. The bet is that the future looks more like the applications Cloudflare is good at serving and less like the applications that require traditional cloud infrastructure.
The build for where the puck is going. Strategy.
Except they're not predicting where the puck is going. They're building the ice rink.
Alright, before we wrap, I want to touch on one more thing. Cloudflare has a reputation, and I've heard this from people who've worked there, for being intense. High expectations, fast pace, not a lot of patience for mediocrity.
This is well documented. Matthew Prince has talked openly about the company's culture. They've had public incidents. There was a controversial firing in 2021 that got significant media attention, where an employee was let go for reasons that the company handled, let's say, less than gracefully. They've had to reckon with questions about whether their internal culture matches their external posture of internet freedom and transparency.
The "we're making the internet better" pitch gets complicated when your internal practices don't seem to match.
To their credit, they've made changes. They've invested in internal culture work. But the intensity is still there, and I think it's worth noting because it's part of how they've moved this fast. The company that ships R2, Workers AI, D1, durable objects, and acquires Replicate in the span of a few years is not a relaxed company.
The Sloth would not thrive there.
The Sloth would be fired during orientation.
I'd still be filling out the onboarding paperwork while they launched 3 products.
Your first pull request would ship approximately 4 years after you joined.
It would be beautiful.
It would be a single line change, and it would be perfect.
All right, let's pull this together. Cloudflare started as a spam tracking side project, became a CDN and security company, and is now building a global application platform that competes with cloud providers, deployment platforms, and AI infrastructure companies simultaneously. Their architectural bet is edge everything. Their economic bet is that zero egress and usage-based pricing wins over time. Their cultural bet is that moving fast and being opinionated attracts the developers they want.
The end game, if they pull it off, is being the default layer between developers and the internet, not just protecting applications, but hosting them, running their AI, storing their data, and handling their deployment. A platform that makes the traditional cloud provider almost invisible to the developer.
The cloud provider you don't think about because it just works.
That's the pitch. Whether they get there depends on whether they can expand their platform capabilities faster than the incumbents can adapt, and whether developers are willing to accept the trade-offs. The lock-in risk, the runtime constraints, the concentration risk, in exchange for the simplicity and performance.
If they fail, they're still a very good CDN and security company with a massive network and a profitable business. There are worse fallback positions.
We tried to eat the cloud and ended up just being very successful outcome.
The Sloth's preferred approach to ambition. Aim high, nap if it doesn't work out. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1980s, researchers on Bioko Island in Equatorial Guinea discovered that certain carpenter ant colonies develop a collective amnesia after exposure to a specific fungal pathogen. The ants continue laying pheromone trails as normal, but the trails lead nowhere, and the colony starves while mechanically performing foraging behaviors that no longer serve any function.
Alright. The question we'll leave listeners with, if you're starting a new project today, do you build on Cloudflare, or do you stick with the traditional cloud providers? And if you pick Cloudflare, what's your escape plan if you need one?
That's the conversation worth having. Not, is Cloudflare good? They clearly are. But what am I trading off, and do I understand the trade-offs?
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com. And if you enjoyed this, leave us a review wherever you listen.
We'll be back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.